Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and file this next conversation under discussion 241.7, subsection B, in the Is Hillary Clinton Running for President folder. Last week, she announced a book deal on her time as Secretary of State. That's due out next year. Early, and we mean early, speculative polls show her trouncing any potential Republican candidates as well as Democratic primary opponents, except New Jersey Governor Chris Christie in a general election, who she would only beat by 3 points. Then came two speeches, the first made after her two-month break, and one line in particular has some Clinton watchers and enthusiasts absolutely verklempt.
This truly is the unfinished business of the 21st century, and it is the work we are called to do. I look forward to being your partner in all the days and years ahead. Let's keep fighting for opportunity and dignity.
Unfinished business? You mean you as president? What else could it possibly mean? Joining us now to help us off the ledge of anticipation is Rebecca Traister, contributor to the New York Times Magazine and Salon. She knows a thing or two about watching Hillary Clinton, as she is also the author of Big Girls Don't Cry, the election that changed everything for American women, about the 2008 election. Hi, Rebecca. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Letty Cotton Pogrebin on the way out the door said to send you her love.
I wanted to say hi to her, too.
And before we get to the ledge and whether anybody should be on it, how did you see last week's Hillary Clinton activity? Speeches, PACs, James Carville has joined one, a book. What did you think?
Well, I didn't necessarily think it told me anything new about Hillary and what her intentions are, but it did tell me all we need to know about how anxious we are to start talking about this a year or 2 years in advance of when we actually need to start talking about it. You know, the stuff about the speech, she's often spoken at Tina Brown's Women in the World conference. She's used that line about the unfinished business of the 20th century. She's been using that off and on for years. She told Newsweek, actually, I think in the fall of 2011, that this was the unfinished business of the 21st century.
In fact, just to prove it, because we were thinking along these lines, too, after you pointed out to my producer on the phone that she's been using this phrase for years, we looked it up, and sure enough, here is 19 seconds of Hillary Clinton from 2010, 2011, and 2012.
Helping more women become full and equal participants in every aspect.
Is the last piece of unfinished business that we must...
I believe this is the unfinished business of the 21st century.
Women's rights. And that we know that that is unfinished business.
So there it is. And I wonder, I guess, if it's changed meaning or it's one of those phrases that can mean a few different things, including being a totally shattered presidential glass ceiling when we wanted to.
Well, you know, of course, it changes meaning. You know, anything you say changes meaning as time passes, as circumstance changes, and depending on the audience and the ears that, you know, that are hearing it and how they want to take it. There are a couple things I would point out, though. One is I would question the reading of it that says that if Hillary gets to be president or that this is her intention or her meaning, that Hillary's imagined future presidency finishes the business. Okay, of diversifying, you know, our presidential roster.
Just like racism is all gone now that Obama's president.
And this is actually something that I find disturbing in how I often read about this potential prospect being covered, as if, oh, we've got a black guy president and a white woman president, so we're done. Thank God we took care of that trouble. And one of the things that obscures, actually, when Hillary talks about women's rights being the unfinished business, this is in the context that she's been talking about it for several years. She's really been talking about women around the world. She's been talking about a tremendous diversity of women, and they're not just the political prospects of one woman, but about the sort of economic, political, and social parity of women around the world.
She's
talking about a disservice.
Right. She's talking about 5-year-olds who aren't allowed to go to school.
Exactly. And one of the things that when we focus entirely on Hillary, and I'm not saying she shouldn't run for president or that I'm not fascinated and interested, and perhaps in a year will be enthusiastic about the idea. But I do think we obscure some of the other stories about other people who are breaking into politics, you know, not necessarily on the presidential level, though some of them could be. We have a terrifically more diverse roster of people out there, from Tammy Baldwin and Tammy Duckworth and Susanna Martinez and Nikki Haley and Nina Turner in Ohio and Mazie Hirono in Hawaii. We have really a group of women and men who are more diverse than we've seen in politics in years. And when we focus entirely on just the Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton dichotomy of black man and white woman, we lose the idea that one of the things we're pushing toward is not just one person to fill one slot, but a vastly more diverse roster of candidates from whom to choose down the road.
So women listening right now, do you want to weigh in on this? Are you paying attention to a potential Clinton run on the edge of your seat because it makes you so excited, so enthusiastic? Did you vote for Hillary in 2008 and you're eagerly awaiting a chance to do it again for history's sake, for progress's sake? Or are you just tuning out when people talk about this so early? If you're tuning out, then you're not listening to this conversation. Or is it really too early? Is the frenzy absurd? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For Rebecca Tracy. And I'll be honest, Rebecca, when we talked among ourselves, you know, on our team about whether to even have this conversation, because we also do tend to roll our eyes. We see David Gregory go and meet the press every week, it seems, and look a little guilty, even as he says, no, it's not too early to talk about 2016 and all that stuff, and we roll our eyes. But women I know, both personally and professionally, have a real appetite for information about Clinton's potential run and for seeing her in the White House again. Obviously, not everybody, but there is a significant pool of people, to my observations and my, you know, mostly female producers' observations about how much excitement there is and how much this is not just a media-made fervor. What's your impression?
Well, this speaks to something that's really interesting about Clinton. Hillary Clinton and her husband, but now perhaps even more Hillary on her own, which is very satisfying to me, is one of the great American characters we've seen in our lifetimes. And I mean this as a character from every angle. She has existed in our consciousness nationally since 1991. So 22 years, she has not been out of the spotlight. And during that time, there's been every possible combination of storyline and narrative around her, from the personal, the scandal. We know about her marriage. She's a kind of a personal celebrity. We've thought hard about her private life, to the political career that for many is inspiring. She's been a villain, which people also love. We love villains. We love heroes. She is a history maker, which makes many people and has already broken any number of glass ceilings. She's representative of a generation that really defined the contemporary United States. She is her youth and her politics come out of the civil rights movement, the women's movement. So she brings all of this powerful history about which we feel very emotional. So plus she was in this incredible election, the most gripping election, the most incredible story. I mean, I wrote a book about it. It was the easiest book to write because it was the greatest story. So she is a terrific character like we might find on television or in a terrific novel. And she's right in front of us and we just want to talk about her all the time. So that's part of what it is. We want her to run whether we love her or hate her because we can't wait to talk some more about her because she's such a gripping figure.
Reba in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Reba.
Yes. Nobody's a bigger Hillary supporter than I am.
And I can say that
Reba's
been calling this show since, what, Reba, 1992,
right.
Supporting first Bill and then Hillary every step of the way.
Absolutely. And I believe Hillary's a feminist and would love to see the first woman president in her lifetime. However, I'm not one of those people who are sure that she is going to run. She's going to be 69 years old, and I know running for president is very draining and exhausting, and I frankly don't know whether she has the energy, the health to carry on such an exhausting campaign, knowing how hard she ran in 2008 and with no guarantee that she's going to get the nomination. We don't know what's going to happen in 2000 or that she's going to win. So I would like to do what's best for her, and she should do, and that would be fine with me.
And if she does run, will you be an enthusiastic supporter again.
Of course, she's an extraordinary, the most extraordinary woman of our time, probably in U.S. history. Nobody has her accomplishments. Name one woman who's as accomplished as Hillary.
Reba, thank you very much. And just by way of political analysis, Rebecca, I think one of the things that came out of the 2008 race is that Hillary Clinton wound up with a certain set of conservative credentials that she didn't have before, ironically enough. I mean, you know, if you go back to 2007 and take like the Sean Hannity show, which turned itself into the Stop Hillary Express. They had this announcer's voice saying that, right? And it was everything evil and super liberal about Hillary Clinton. And then when it turned into Obama, really to a lot of people's surprise back then, and Hillary started running a little bit to his right. She was, to some people, you know, the more kind of white working class acceptable alternative. And I actually think that would help her a great deal if she runs again.
Well, it might. She also was moving toward the center. I think, you know, and this is not a defense of that, but while she was in the Senate, she was moving toward a more center approach, as her husband did. And you know, this is not so different from Barack Obama's path either. They were always very similar politicians. The perception that she was very much, that she was to the right of Obama, was also a perception about how the how Democrats arrayed themselves around those two candidates. In fact, they were always very similar politicians. They took a very similar pragmatic approach because they were not like those who had preceded them. They had to step very carefully. And I, my view, actually, as somebody who was covering that race, was that, yes, Obama was certainly to the left of her on foreign policy, but she was slightly to the left of him on domestic and economic issues. But the way the party arrayed, they got put in these sort of one-dimensional boxes in which it looked like she was a crypto-Republican and he was a liberal redeemer. And we know that actually neither of those probably were true. They're very similar. One of the reasons they really work well together and that they had an affinity for each other both before they ran against each other and then when they worked together within the administration. But yes, she is, there's no question that Hillary is not going to run, you know, from the left. She may, in fact, if she does wind up running, I wouldn't be surprised if she isn't. I would be surprised if she isn't challenged from the left by someone.
And the potential of Hillary Clinton running for president was a main topic of conversation on the Sunday talk shows this weekend, given some of the events of the last week. And one comment from Arianna Huffington caught our attention. On ABC this week, George Stephanopoulos asked his panel of guests, including Arianna, if they thought Clinton is running for sure in 2016. And here's what Huffington said.
Now, she's obviously running, but what I was hoping is that she would have taken more time to become what she called herself untired. You know, after all,
untired.
That was her term. You know, she wanted to sleep in, to be able to recharge herself. She hasn't given herself that time.
She hasn't given herself that time. And that really startled me. I wondered, would Arianna Huffington or anyone else wonder if a man were not taking it easy enough? Or is this genuine concern about her health? Or is there some competitiveness between them from
a
history
I
that I don't know?
If I remember correctly, Arianna Huffington a few years ago and perhaps for years since has had a particular issue on the Huffington Post about sleep and maybe particularly how women need sleep. So this may play into Arianna's own interest, both personal and professional, in rest. I noticed that Maureen Dowd also commented, oh, Hillary was supposed to go off to a spa, but here she is already running for president. This notion that she was supposed to take vacation, and let me tell you, I would have taken a vacation, although my propensity to take a vacation is probably why I'm not Secretary of State, among many other reasons. But Hillary, again, since 1991, we have seen her running for First Lady, as First Lady, doing health care, having a pretty intense 8 years as First Lady, going straight into a Senate term, straight into a second Senate term, straight into a race for the presidency, and then straight into a job as Secretary of State. In everything we know about Hillary, do we know her as someone who takes vacations?
By the way, wasn't she out of the limelight for 2 months? That's a longer vacation than I've ever taken.
It is, and she was ill. I mean, if you're talking about after she had her blood clot and was bedridden, yes. I mean, and there were periods after the presidential race where she laid low for a couple of months. But this is not a woman who we've ever known to be a go-to-a-spa-and-lie-on-a-beach figure. So the expectation that she should do that, I think, is probably a little misplaced.
James in Bed-Stuy, you're on WNYC. Hi, James.
Hi, good afternoon. I was a huge Hillary supporter in 2008, and then I did not support Obama in the general election, mainly because of what the Democratic Party did with Hillary's delegates from Florida and Michigan. I found that Obama didn't even run in Michigan, and that they took half of her votes and half of her delegates and gave them to him. I found it extraordinarily undemocratic. I was going to support any other candidate except the Democratic candidate in 2008. And I'll just add one quick other thing before I'll go, and that is if people are really concerned about Hillary's health, they might look at how long her mom hung on. If genes have anything to do with it, Hillary has a long life ahead of her. Appreciate you taking my call.
James, thank you very much. Rebecca Traister, before you go, just a thought about British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher in this context. Most of her obituary writers are noting that Thatcher would not likely have called herself a feminist, though she certainly was a trailblazer for women who aspired to head of state and showed everybody how tough a woman could be as head of state. As someone who has thought a lot about leadership in women, what kind of legacy did she have in this area for you, even though you probably were revolted by a lot of her policies?
Revolted is a very good word. She certainly would not have called herself a feminist, and I believe called feminism poison at some point. I may be wrong about that. She was virulently anti-feminist and did not push through policies that were good for women. She was not a feminist hero. That said, and this is an argument that I've made many times with regard to Sarah Palin, if we're actually talking about, there are two separate issues. There's who's a feminist and does good things for women, but there's also the question of if we're actually pushing toward gender parity in politics and in business and in all kinds of realms, we're also going to need women to be the kinds of politicians we vote against, in addition to being the politicians we vote for. That's actually going to be what parity looks like. And this is something, a version of which Bella Abzug was saying in the 70s when she said it's not just about finding a female Einstein, it's about promoting a female Schlemiel as quickly as we promote a male Schlemiel. It's not necessarily feminist, or a woman doesn't have to be a feminist hero or somebody we admire and idealize on feminist grounds in order for her to have her presence on the landscape to have expanded our vision for what leadership can look like. And I think that's something that we can say about Margaret Thatcher.
Well, now that the word verklempt and the word Schlemiel have both entered this conversation, it's probably time to wrap it up.
We need a Jewish president.
I guess.
Where are the Jews?
The first Jewish, we almost had the first Jewish vice president.
That's right.
In fact, I guess technically he was elected, if you count the popular vote. all right, we leave it there with Rebecca Traister. Let's see, can people read you on this? Have you published on this?
No, I'm in the middle of writing a book on another subject. But I've written a whole book about Hillary Clinton running for president in 2008, which I'm sure we're going to cover a lot of the same ground in coming years.
Thanks a lot. We sure will. Thanks for
coming
on.
Thank you so much, Brian.